In the legal world, knowledge is mostly shared through the written word, in briefs and judgments. But true wisdom, that's passed from person to person over time. Welcome to Elephant Echoes, a podcast that provides a platform for Bowman's legal veterans to pass their wisdom to the next generation of lawyers. I'm Bianca Masterton, a knowledge and learning lawyer in Bowman's Johannesburg office. As organizations such as Bowman's grow, evolve, and adapt, there is a risk of institutional knowledge being lost over time. This podcast is inspired by the great elephant herds and their complex and caring social structures. Our most experienced practitioners share their knowledge, skills, and insights as to how to become outstanding lawyers with flourishing practices. In this episode, Audax Khemija, a senior consultant based in Dar es Salaam, shares his learnings on his journey to becoming the specialist IP and disputes lawyer he is known as today.
Where do I start? Let me say this. I graduated with an LLB 1995 from the University of Dar es Salaam. I joined the Tanzania People Defense Forces as a legal advisor in 1976. I attended my military training. I was commissioned as an officer of the army. I rose up in ranks, and I left the army in 1984 with the rank of captain. I felt I was not being fully utilized in the army, so I decided to go into private practice. So I joined the Conan Company, which at that time was a one-man firm. But be as it may, it was the most prominent law firm in the Islam. And I was later joined by my dear friend, Dr. Kapinga, with whom now been together for 23 years, and from whom I've learned a lot. So in 2016, I and Dr. Kapinga and a group of four senior associates resigned from the firm and decided to establish our own law firm. But as we were going along with the process, there came Bowman's looking for lawyers with whom they could team up to establish an office in the slum. As it was, if I may put it graphically, the courtship was very, very short. The marriage was soon consummated. A baby was carried, not for 9 months, but for actually a short period of 3 months. And in February 2017, Bowman's Dar es Salaam was born. And the rest is history. The theme of my presentation is how to become an outstanding lawyer with a flourishing practice. Now, I must say, I'm not sure I'm a great lawyer. I would leave that to the judgment of my clients and my peers. I think, with humility, say I'm a good lawyer. What does it take to become a great lawyer? Sacrifices. Serving a client's needs requires sacrifices, especially in terms of time. You'll be expected to work long and unholy hours. And this would have an impact on you personally, in terms of mental and physical health, could have an impact on your family and your friends. If you talk of a family, imagine you have a young family, young kids, whatever the case may be. And you leave home at 6 in the morning, the kids are still asleep. You come back at 9 or 10 in the evening, they're already in bed. So when do you see them? Maybe over the weekend, if even over the weekend you are not in the office. So yeah, you need to strike a balance, but definitely it takes a big toll on the family and on yourself. That's a sacrifice one needs to make if you are talking of becoming a great lawyer. In 1995, we had a case for a client, and it was a big case. We spent a lot of time on it, and it came for hearing on a Monday. Now, on the Saturday prior to the hearing, we had to make final preparations for the hearing. I stayed in the office until 2 in the morning. At that time, there were no cell phones. There were only landlines, and I didn't have a landline at home. So I arrived home at 2:30 to find a red-eyed wife, a tearful wife, who thought probably something terrible had happened to me because she didn't know where I was. And maybe, although she didn't say that to me, maybe she thought I was seeing some other woman somewhere. So you can find yourself in such tricky situations. But as I said, those are sacrifices which you've got to make. Another factor is that you be humble. You need to be humble to your clients and to your teammates. You should be able to learn from others. Even when you are a very experienced lawyer, very experienced litigator, there are some things which might escape your attention. It could be a recently decided case of which you are not aware. But if you are working with somebody, then somebody may tell you, this is not the correct legal position. This is not a proper pleading. And that you could be an associate, senior associate or a fellow partner. But the important thing is, you should be prepared to accept mistakes, that you made mistakes, even to those who are junior to you, and learn from those mistakes. But of course, we all have egos. Some of us actually have egos bigger than ourselves. I remember a case, and Dr. Kapinga will definitely remember that, where a retired judge of the Court of Appeal, upon retirement, joined Mkono and Company. And everybody was happy because now we had what we considered a litigation bull in the firm, in the form of a retired justice of appeal. So one of the first assignments that was given was to draw a pleading. And when the draft went to the managing partner, who was not a politician, he was just a practicing lawyer, a very good one, he corrected every other paragraph of the pleading. And when the draft went back to the judge, he was furious. He couldn't accept the fact that although he was a retired judge of the Court of Appeal, he could do a pleading which would be literally assassinated by the managing partner, if I may put it that way. And inevitably, eventually the judge had to part ways with the judge because he couldn't accept, he was not humble enough to accept that somebody else could be more knowledgeable than himself. Another thing is to keep commitments to clients and to keep the client updated. When a client instructs you, he assumes that you know what you are doing. If you set a time frame for him that you are going to deliver, let's say, an opinion, you are going to deliver a draft, pleading for him to consider, he expects you to abide by the timeline. He might be relying on your opinion in his dealings with the said party. Be realistic in what you promise to the client. You may think you are pleasing your client by promising that you will deliver the opinion or the draft in 2 days' time, only to find that actually you won't be able to do that. Maybe you need another day or 2 days. But when you fail to deliver on the agreed time, the client definitely is not impressed. And that doesn't help your practice. And I think if you are not going to be able to meet the deadline, don't wait for the client to come after you and ask what is happening. Preempt him. Let him know before the deadline that you are working on the matter very hard, but you need some more time. He will respect you for that because he knows actually you are attending to the matter. And for those of us who do litigation, but I guess for everybody else, keep your client updated on what you are doing in his matter. Because as far as the client is concerned, his matter is what you should be dealing with. He doesn't care if you have another 50 matters to attend to. So update him. Let him know what you are doing. If you go to court and the orders are given, even if it is just another formation of the case on another date, make sure the client knows the moment you come back to the office. Let him know the status of the proceedings on that day. It's no use writing a message to the client 3 days later saying, oh, I attended court on this date, and this is what happened. He needs to be immediately informed of what's happening when you come from, let's say, from court. Another matter that's important is that you be the advisor to the client and not change the roles so that you seem to actually to be the one who is being advised by the client. Of course, advising a client is a matter which requires both facts and the law. Now, you know the law, the client knows the facts. So in order to advise him properly, or in order to do a proper pleading with a litigator, you need to have all the relevant facts from the client. As it happens, however, sometimes some clients have reasons for not revealing all the information to you. For example, your client is being sued for breach of contract, and the person who is instructing you, who is briefing you, probably caused that breach, or you contributed to the breach. Obviously, he may not be forthcoming with all the information. Now, it's up to you to get the information from the client. But some clients believe in the need to know. In Tanzania, we know of a certain group of people who believe in the need to know. You will only, if there are 10 facts that you need to know, we will only tell you 5 and keep the rest. Then you poke holes in the story, you ask him, this doesn't make full sense. He gives you another 2 facts and then another 1 fact. And every time you ask him, he says, oh, I didn't know you needed this information. So you have to extract that information from these people. But you need to be careful the way you do it. Because I recall back in my areas at Mkono and Company, a client accused me of double dealing. We were defending a client. I had to interview him in preparation for drawing the written statement of defense. So, of course, I went ahead, interviewed him in the manner in which I thought he would probably be cross-examined by the advocate for the plaintiff. The client became very uneasy because he thought probably there was something fishy. Why was I asking more these questions which he felt should be asked by the advocate for the other party? So after some time, he said he had a commitment. Could we continue the next day? I said, that's fine. Only for me to be called in the evening by the managing partner and being asked, Captain, what do you think you are doing? Said, meaning what? This client says you must be taking money from the other side. Why? He said, well, the way you asked him questions and so on and so forth. And I explained that, of course, to my managing partner's satisfaction. But the point here is you need to get all the facts from the client. Don't assume that the client will always tell you all the truth. But you need to, of course, do it gently. Otherwise, you could end up with a very angry client. And as I said, don't allow your client to be your advisor. You need to be courteous and respectful to the client, but you need to be firm. You are the one who is advising the client. He's not advising you, especially on matters of law. Again, while at Mkono & Company, in my early days as an advocate, I had to appear in a case which we lost in the High Court, and then we went to the Court of Appeal. And the case itself was that our client, the defendant, had been given rice by the plaintiff. He had been appointed as an agent to sell the plaintiff's rice. So they entered into a contract. The rice was delivered to him, tons and tons of rice. It was a very popular rice. It was called VIP from Thailand, I think. So our client very fast realized that actually he could make a lot of money himself. So what did he do? He sold off the plaintiff's rice, but in the meantime, we ordered his own rice from Vietnam. When that rice arrived, he put it in a godown, went to the plaintiff and told the plaintiff, "I'm sorry, there is no market for the rice. I was not able to sell your rice, so you can take it back." And the plaintiff was shocked. How could this be? This is the most popular rice in the country at the moment. So, no, he insisted on being paid the money for the rice. Anyway, to cut a long story short, he went to court, sued our client, and we lost the case in the High Court. He went to the Court of Appeal. I told the client, "Look, this case is obvious, better settle, because nobody is going to believe you that you insisted that this is the plaintiff's rice." So he came up with a strange explanation, which he said was an economic theory called constructive replacement, that will tell the court that the plaintiff's rice anyway had been replaced, and they could take it if he wanted. Looking back, years later, I thought, well, what was I doing? Maybe I was trying to keep the client happy, because I should have put down my foot and said, "No, this is not going to work." I went along, and I went to the Court of Appeal, and I was grilled. And while the client was sitting there comfortably listening to what was going on, I was being asked by the judges of the Court of Appeal to explain where that rice went, because the story we were telling was not adding up. So at the end of the day, we lost the case, but I was thoroughly embarrassed, and I learned a bitter lesson from that experience. Then there is the need to work as a team. Don't be a lone wolf, even if you are very intelligent, very knowledgeable, very experienced. You need to work with a team around you. You always benefit from the input of others in the team on a point which may probably escape your attention, and it will be brought up by somebody else in the team, but also to guarantee continuity in the performance of the task. You don't want to be working alone, and when the client calls asking for an update, and the answer is, "Oh, we are sorry, Captain is on leave or he has traveled. We'll get back to you when we've spoken to him." What impression are you giving the client? That, well, I instructed the firm, but how is it now that only a captain knows this matter in the entire firm? So you need to work with the team. assign work to others, of course, depending on their level of understanding, on the level of knowledge. It has its own challenges, of course. It's not always that easy, because, for example, whenever you assign work to a junior, what does that practically mean? It also means that you will not be doing that work, you will not be capturing time for that part of the work. Now, if you have targets to meet in terms of work the hours, in terms of build the hours, you may think, well, I'd better do this work myself and get more hours on the matter. But that is, it could be counterproductive. But the point here is work as a team, don't be a lone wolf hunting on this, on that expedition. Also, you need to be fair and respectful, not only to the clients, but also to the to your colleagues. You need to earn the respect of your colleagues. You need to make, to help them trust you, and vice versa. And that's how you can effectively cut out the instructions. I mean, what do I mean by this? For example, if I'm working with an associate or senior associate, and I come to discover that that associate is padding his work the hours, meaning that he works for three hours, he records five. He works for 4 hours, he records six. And at the end of the day, of course, the invoice will be inflated. Now, if the client challenges that invoice, it's me as a billing person who will have to answer for that. And if I discover that actually I was put in that embarrassment by this associate, how do you think twice before I gave him work? And I wouldn't trust him, and that could spoil the relationship in the team. But vice versa, if I meddle with the associate's times, he records 30 hours, and for some reason he ends up with the 20 because I've appropriated the other 10. If he finds that out, he will not respect me. And he will not be eager to work with me. Every time we come up with an explanation why he's not available for this assignment. Being fair and respectful to others in the team is as important as being fair and respectful to the clients, and being respectful to the client. Now, the young lawyers, associates and senior associates aspiring to become partners, who thinks life is very tough, as an associate's life is very tough, and probably the partners make life very miserable for them. I would recommend to them to read two novels by John Grisham. He's a prolific writer. I've read each and every one of his novels, but the two novels I recommend that young lawyers read is a novel titled The Firm and another one called entitled The Associate. You read those two novels. They will help you a lot in actually surviving the long and arduous journey to partnership and to a successful career as a lawyer. Because when you read those novels, much as they are telling a story, sometimes you can't help feel like, and you can identify everybody in the firm will be some character in those novels. You can identify, you can relate the story to some real event that has happened to you or to somebody else in the firm. I beg to rest my case.
Thank you, Audax. That was so lovely and strong themes for me coming through about teamwork and obviously client centricity, but managing their expectations. I think that's an important piece. So we'd like to open up the floor to any questions you may have for Audax.
Mrs. Wilbert, just a naughty question for you. A good friend of many years. So what do you see as having practiced for nearly 40 years between only two law firms? Maybe it would be interesting to hear from you. What do you see as the differentiating features between the two firms you have worked in, namely in Corn and Core, which you say was a leading practice in Tanzania, and your last 7 years in Bombay? So what do you see as the differentiating factors which we can take a lesson from as our associates grow in this new firm in Bombay?
Yes, the first difference is the way we work as a team. At Connolly Company, I think we usually to work as individuals. Maybe it was because of the number of lawyers in the firm, but we tended to keep files to our own. This is my file. This is my client. If it was a case, you worked on a case from day one until the case is concluded in court. 2-3 years down the line, you are working on the case on yourself. So there is a difference here, because in this firm, we work as a team, even on cases, as you are aware. I hardly work on a big case without your involvement, and vice versa. And we involve associates and with senior associates. We work as a team here, as opposed to in the previous firm. But also, I think there is more structure here, there is more predictability here. You know what you are supposed to do. If you are an associate, you know what you are supposed to do to move to senior associate and the senior associate to partner. You know there are boxes to be taken. That was not the case in the previous firm. In the previous firm, would probably think, oh, so and so, I think they are performing very well. Let him be, him or her, be promoted. But really, if you to be asked, why have you promoted this person and not this other one? And ask you for the criteria for the promotions, you'd hardly get a satisfactory answer. Yeah, and I think also there is more attention paid to the development, career development of individuals. In the previous firm, I think there was so much concentration on making money. And, well, understandably, everybody wants to make money. But I think there was too much emphasis on making money that not much attention was paid to the advancement of the individual in terms of knowledge, for example, in terms of training. Everything else that we do in the Bowmans to advance the career of our lawyers, especially the junior lawyers, not much of that was done in the Comment Company.
This is Mavuto from Lusaka. You mentioned the need to be humble. I know being a lawyer in Dar is quite an elite position. To what extent is it necessary, or from your experience, is it necessary to remain humble in society generally? You know, because you always attract attention to yourself as, you know, the elite lawyers of Dar. And how does that affect the popularity in society? How does that affect your performance as a lawyer at the office?
When I talk of humbleness, I'm looking at it from the professional point of view. I'm looking at my clients. I'm looking at my colleagues, and the humbleness I'm talking about here is, as I said, for example, being prepared to learn from others and being prepared to accept mistakes and learn from them. I suppose. Even going beyond these two groups and in society, the same principles still apply. But when it comes to society at large, for example, how does the society view women? You can't ignore that factor. If, for example, you go out and make trouble with people, so you get drunk and start fighting people in the bar or something like that, using profane language, people just, who is this fellow? Oh, that's Captain. Oh, where does he work? Oh, he's a lawyer in Beaumont. And the people, well, may not necessarily think that you are an individual. They may think, oh, well, maybe that's how Beaumont's lawyers behave. So, yeah, it's important to carry the right image of you as an individual. It can have an impact on the image in the way the society view Beaumont. So you need to be a good ambassador of Beaumont beyond your clients and your colleagues.
Well, Dax, thank you so much for your time this morning. I truly appreciate it. And I think everybody will have heard something that they can take away and incorporate into their practices today.
Thank you very much, Bianca.
If you would like to get in touch or find out more about Beaumont, please visit BowmansLaw.com.